people will go around and ask and be like, oh yeah, so like, how are you different from that other company? Like, just out of curiosity. And if you're like, oh yeah, we're pretty much the same. I mean, I don't know. You know, then like, what is that? Yeah. How does that reflect on the company, on the product? It's pretty much like, okay, like it doesn't, it's like not super valuable. But if you can just then recite like, oh, great question. Like, boom, we have this, they don't, we have this, they don't. If you can do that off the top of your head, then it just, it strengthens, I've found, just like the overall narrative for the company. And it only brings good things when you can have that level of comfort.
Yeah. I mean, I experienced that. I was at a conference and there's a particular product in the interactive product demo space that I sort of have a brand affinity for. And I was at this conference and saw another vendor in the space. And so I went up to the booth and my only question was like, hey, how are you guys different from so-and-so?
Hey everyone, welcome to the Product Marketing Life podcast. My name is Colin Majak, lead PMM at Klassi. And today I sat down with Andy McCotter Bicknell. Now, if you don't know Andy, you are in for a treat. Andy is the head of competitive intel at Apollo and the founder of Healthy Competition. In this episode, we dove into all things competitive, from on the personal side, Andy's move from ZoomInfo to Apollo, which is ZoomInfo's biggest competitor, some common misconceptions about CI, and how to differentiate your product from competitors while still speaking well of them. Now, before we get into the episode, a quick story. I wanted to tell this story in the podcast, but I was a little bit B2B starstruck, so I forgot, but you need to know it. About a year ago, I had just gotten laid off from a job and I ended up doing some LinkedIn DM blasting to basically all the product marketers in my network. And in that list was Andy. Now, Andy and I hadn't met, we hadn't chatted, but he was a great follow. So this was my first interaction with Andy. And his response was so gracious and kind. Not only was he just empathetic and open to connections, but what really stood out is he offered for me to join Healthy Competition, which is a paid community, and he let me join for free, just as an offer while I'm looking for a job. And I say that ultimately for you to know that Andy isn't just a smart competitive intelligence leader, he's just a deeply good guy. Enjoy the episode.
Andy, how are you doing today, man?
I am doing fabulous. How about you?
I'm doing really well. It is gray, which reminds me, in fact, you are calling from one of my favorite cities in the U.S.
Yeah.
Just outside of Portland, Oregon.
I am. Yeah, that's funny. It's associated with gray. That's fair. It is fairly gray around this time. We have great summers, great falls. It can be pretty gray, though. I agree.
The great summers is the narrative that Portlanders latch onto to survive 9 months of the year of just not sitting gray.
Yeah, it's funny because I grew up in Michigan, and so I'm used to like the great summers narrative. Wow. But at the very least in Portland, we don't have bad winters. You know what I mean? Like, it's like the temperature is like, you know, it can get like as low as like 40. In Michigan, it can get into the negatives. And so at least I have that going for me now.
And I will say, I lived in Portland for 7 years, and I will go to bat for the fact that I think it has some of the best food in the United States.
Just yes.
Hand down. And not at a gouge you price.
Yeah, I agree. That is one of the top reasons why we continue to stay here. It's so many different places to eat, so many different styles of food. A lot of it is very affordable. So yeah, definitely can't recommend that enough if you're a foodie.
Do you have a favorite restaurant? If you had to pick one for right now, like, you're going to show me your favorite spot.
Yeah, I would say a good, like, just for anybody, I would say is Porcano. It's a taco place. There's a couple of locations in Portland. And they just have such great tacos, great margaritas. And it's all like at a very like reasonable price. And it's a good like atmosphere. You can sit inside, you can sit outside. That's a good, I feel like, primer for a lot of different eating options in Portland for sure.
I was a Brian's Bowl guy. I always go for the bowl when I'm there. But dude, thanks again for joining. For those of you who don't know Andy is the head of competitive intel at Apollo and the founder of Healthy Competition. Andy, can you just give me a high level? What is Healthy Competition?
Yeah, Healthy Competition is a newsletter, podcast, and community for competitive intel practitioners. I realized a couple of years ago when I was doubling down on competitive intel that there really weren't too many resources for helping folks in the space on that topic. And so that's why I put those resources together. It's really about connecting other folks that are in competitive intel or product marketing that like skews towards competitive intel, sharing tips and tricks, making sure that everyone can be successful. I think historically there's been like a weird wall around competitive intel just because like competition can be like sensitive. And I think there's a lot that can and should be shared to help folks in that role be successful. And so that's what those resources are all dedicated to doing.
Yeah. We're all just scared of competitive intel because we're afraid they're going to fight us or spy.
It's weird. Everyone's spying on everyone anyway. You know what I mean? We're all nosy. Oh, so
for sure. For sure. You're telling me you haven't booked a demo under your personal email?
Oh, come on. Yeah. Like you haven't. Well, and that's the thing, too. Like there's good practices and there's bad practices. Not all competitive intel is not all practices are good. Not all are bad. And so there's definitely like a gray area that I think that people should be educated on. And so that's, again, big part of the reason for all of those resources.
Yeah. Now, most of the guests that we've had on this podcast are product marketers or senior product marketers, more at a general level. And you're probably one of the few dedicated CI folks who's been on. Could you give kind of the career flyover of what did that path look like for you moving into competitive?
Yeah, sure. So when I graduated from college, I went into a sales role. It was kind of like an SDR-ish kind of role. But I graduated with a marketing degree, and so I really wanted to get into marketing. And I also really wanted to get out of Michigan. And so I was just kind of throwing my application everywhere, anyone that would take me into a marketing role. And the first company that responded was in Vancouver, Washington, and it was ZoomInfo, and it was for an associate product marketing role. And so, heck yeah, I'll take that. Me and my wife moved out to Vancouver, Washington, and that's where I started my product marketing career. And it was a little bit of everything. You know, I was on a team of, it was me and one other product marketer that we were supporting ZoomInfo's go-to-market. And so it was like buyer personas, messaging, positioning, product launches, competitive intel. And I realized, well, actually, I should say that like probably like 3-4 months into it, one of the tasks I was given was to send just like a handful of like a couple bullets of like competitive information to our CEO at the time. And it was like our competitor's employee count that you would find on LinkedIn. And like that was something that our CEO was really interested in. And I realized like, okay, well, I'm an associate product marketer. Like I don't really have many at-bats with our CEO. And so like this one touch point, I'm going to try to make this like as good as possible. And so I tried to like continue adding to it, adding more context, making sure the quality was as top-notch as possible, and started helping out a little bit more on like competitive deals on the sales side and all that kind of stuff. And I just kind of started becoming more synonymous with competitive intel or anything that had to do with competitors. And it wasn't like a specific like, oh, I want to be the competitive intel guy. It was just kind of like, oh, I realized that that's something that the company seems to value. I should probably like double click into this and try to just continue to level up as often as possible. And so that continued over a span of a little over 3 years. And I was in a good spot and thought, okay, cool, in a good place where I can maybe try to build a similar program in another company. And so I went over to ClickUp, and this new role was entirely focused on competitive intel. It was building out the competitive intel program there. And then a couple of years later, saw an opportunity at Apollo, and I was like, hey, I know this space. And so it was a nice, easy transition. And again, doing a similar thing. I'm pretty much 100% competitive intel and just building out the program there. And so that's the mile high overview.
Cool. Thanks for sharing that. I have to imagine that for a lot of people who've specialized in competitive intel, that there was that similar sort of stumbling into it where a need popped up and it was that first battle card or that first, you know, dot points to a CEO, and then slowly it forming. Have you found, as you've talked to other CI professionals, that that's typically the story where they become the competitive guy or the competitive person at the company?
Yeah, it's not dissimilar to product marketing. It's funny, you know, there's not really a degree. I guess there probably is. I'm sure there's like an MBA, like focus or specialty on that stuff. But most people that I talk to and most people that I serve through Healthy Competition, they do just kind of like stumble into it. And so I think it's super common that, especially now when there are so many options for different solutions, products in tech, like people are starting to realize, oh yeah, we need a more substantial competitive information and resources so that we can make informed decisions. And yeah. So they try to dedicate more headcount, more resources. They try to get more product marketers to be more educated on competitors. And so that's kind of, I feel like the transition or how most people are getting into competitive until now.
Yeah. Now, you nodded at this when you were kind of giving your flyover, but when I look at your work history, I see some tea. Like I see like a little bit of spice. And in my mind, that's that you spent 3 years at ZoomInfo and now you're the head of competitive at Apollo. There.
Yeah.
I think in my mind, they're clearly their biggest competitor. And you have quite literally have all the intel, like 3 years deep, and then now to actually be at Apollo.
Yeah.
From the outside, Apollo pulls no punches when it comes to competing with ZoomInfo. Like you look at posts from the company or from Daniel C and others, and from the outside, it's a brawl. So ZoomInfo just is getting roasted consistently. Now, without breaking an NDA, what's it been like for you to compete with a company that you have so much history with?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm actually really glad that you asked this because I think that this kind of topic is like overly like hush hush and like, ooh, like sensitive. And it really shouldn't be. I mean, at the end of the day, we don't even need to mention anything about NDAs because most people that are working like below the threshold of like a VP level, or if you're not like, you know, working directly with a product, you're not really working with like proprietary information. And you don't really need to be too concerned with like NDAs or sharing like company sensitive like information. Obviously like revenue and that kind of stuff it should be kept like close to the chest. Obviously you shouldn't share that information, but for like a publicly traded company like ZoomInfo, you know, all that stuff is out there anyway. And so there's very little that somebody, you know, going into another like IC role at a competitor, you're not going to have like a massive, like negative impact, or you're not going to have all of this like crazy, like knowledge that's going to take down an entire entity. And so I think that's really important to note there. Number two is I went from ZoomInfo and then I spent a couple years at another company and then I went to Apollo, and a lot can change in 2 years. And so to say that like I have all the intel, that's not very much the case. A lot of the people that I worked with when I was at ZoomInfo are no longer at ZoomInfo. And a lot of the ways they approach business and a lot of things in the landscape have changed since I was there. And so, yeah, I'm familiar with the space, which is really important going into a competitive intel role, being aware of like who the buyers are, what the other products are, the value of those products, the history, like how things work. All those are really, really important in going into a competitive intel role. But guess what? That's also really important going into any marketing role. And I've seen that too with a lot of other, you know, product marketers, growth marketers. They might spend some time at one vendor in a specific category. And then, hey, you've built up all this knowledge on this category, on this buyer persona. Like, doesn't it make sense to continue to compound that knowledge and take it somewhere else to another company that's trying to build in that space? Yeah. For me, that seemed like a no-brainer. So that was the reasoning for going to another company in the space with Apollo. Now, yes, to answer your question, Apollo is pretty vocal when it comes to competing against ZoomInfo. And I think, you know, the funny thing about that is I did see that when I was at ClickUp. You know, Dan is, you know, an absolute how do I want to say, like, I love Dan and all the stuff that he is working. He is an absolute genius when it comes to marketing, community, getting attention. And I've learned so much. I learned so much from him, even on the outside, without actually working directly with him. But the beauty of all of what he's put together, like on LinkedIn, is that at the end of the day, yeah, he like puts out some spicy posts about ZoomInfo. But at the end of the day, what he's really created is this kind of army of people who feel a certain way about our competitors and feel strongly enough about Apollo that they want to go out and share their experience. And so, you know, we talk about the importance of sharing customer testimonials, case studies, all that kind of stuff. But I think what he's done through, you know, and not just Dan, but like we have an incredible team of, you know, an incredible community team and customer advocate team, is they've really created this almost desire for our customers to go out and tell their stories about Apollo and maybe their previous experience with competitors in such a way that it's interesting for people to pay attention to. It's gotten to the point where even if you're not really in the space, you're still paying attention to it and you have a point of view about it.
Oh, I'm watching.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like you're watching it.
I'm not in that space directly.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's it's a way of approaching community that I don't think has been done before. And so seeing that from the outside looking in, it was like, oh my God, like I very, very impressed. And as I've gotten to know Dan and worked with him, you know, he's been an incredible colleague and someone who's super, super, like I said, like forward thinking. And so it's been awesome to work with him in that capacity too. So hopefully that shines some light on like how I've thought about that, that progress and, or that progression, like with my career. But there's a little bit of something there for anybody else too, because I know that that's been a topic, I think, for anybody who, you know, has spent more than 5 years in the tech space. You know, it's like, oh, should I go to like someone else, like another competitor? Is that wrong? Like, what are the ethical concerns there? We could keep talking about it, but like, hopefully that helps shine a little bit more light on my opinion there.
No, I think that's really helpful, because there's a certain inevitability about it that if you stay in an industry for a while, you are most valuable in that industry. And if you change jobs, it makes the most sense to stay kind of in the sphere because you have the most knowledge. It transfers the easiest. And so as much as I, you know, it doesn't make as juicy drama to say like, hey, competition's normal and it's part of life. I do think it's a helpful perspective because it can destigmatize that. And also, it really does pave the way for people to make advancements.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, like what I care most about is, you know, people that are creating great careers for themselves and they're earning a great living through the knowledge that they've built within whatever industry or product that they've worked with. And yeah, I mean, just like I think it's pretty common that if you spend more time in a specific industry or with a specific buyer persona or product category, like the more valuable you're going to be to those companies that are in that category. And so definitely like just something to consider. Obviously that's, you know, some people really want to diversify and go to different industry. And I think that's great. I kind of experienced that when I went from the sales intelligence world to project management when I was over at ClickUp. And, you know, there was a little bit of a learning curve there, but definitely something that I enjoyed learning about. I now have opinions on the project management space, just kind of like how I do in the sales intelligence space. And, you know, down the road, I'll probably, you know, have opinions on some other different categories that I work in down the road. That'll make me valuable there too. But this was kind of my first foray into being like, okay, I'm going to go back to this one space. I already have like this foundation of opinions. It seems to match that of the employer. And so like, there's not going to be as much of a ramp up period. Let's just kind of like get to work and try to take action on it. And so it's been great so far.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. You know, we hinted at this a little bit and you said you were watching it from afar. Apollo is, I would say, takes an assertive approach in the way they compete. There's no beating around the bush about that competition. Did you walk into that more assertive approach, or do you feel like as you've joined, that's been something you've continued to kind of champion or have to move forward?
No, luckily it's something that I walked into. To have to champion it, it's definitely, it'd be a little bit tougher. So I definitely like empathize for people that have to like, you know, like really push their leadership team to be cool with like mentioning competitors. Yeah, it was something that I saw on the outside looking in. When I was at ClickUp, I saw all of the kind of like the narrative that Apollo was creating and sharing about other players in the space and how they differentiated. And so that was just like one less thing that I had to really like push for when I started. Like, it was already like, hey, we understand this is really important. We need to dedicate resources to continuing that narrative and making sure we stay educated on the competition. And so we're going to hire a head of CI to do that. And so here I am doing that thing. I don't have to like continue. I mean, don't get me wrong. You have to like continue to express and share like how you're making an impact, but I didn't have to go in and then say, hey, like, this is really important to be competitive. You know what I mean? Like, we are kind of past that step. And so that's, that was good for me going in, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. That sort of woe of the product marketer who needs to convince their team to talk about their competitors and actually address competitive realities. It makes me think of, there's this idea that you beat up on a lot. I've seen it in your posts. I've seen it in your newsletters. And it's this idea, oh, we shouldn't talk about our competitors. It just brings them attention. To kind of help that, if we can imagine our PMM friend who's trying to kind of make an argument for talking about competitors and addressing them more directly, why is that bad advice?
To not mention competitors? Why is that bad? I think that the biggest issue with that is, I kind of hinted at it earlier, but there are just so many options in when it comes to buying tech, or really buying anything at this point. There's just so many different options. Yeah. And if you don't go out and say like who you're an alternative for, or who you replace, then people just don't know. Like, I think it might have been good advice pre-internet because you didn't really have the resources to, when I say you, a buyer didn't have the resources to go and like make actual, like they didn't have the resources to research. They couldn't just Google, hey, what's an alternative to this, or like reviews of X, Y, or Z. Yeah. Now people do. And I think there was a G2 report, it might have been G2 or Forrester. I forget who it was, but they said that like on average, there are 3 to 4 tools that are in like a buyer's evaluation, that they're trying to decide between. And so, okay, cool. I think we can all agree, like, if we look at our own, like, the way that we purchase things, I don't know about you, I rarely just see, like, one thing, click buy, and go. Unless it's, like, a $5, $10 thing, you know what I mean? Like, I just bought a tarp on Amazon yesterday for $10. I didn't really look at competitors for that. I just, like, said, okay, it's, like, is it a reasonable price? Is it the size I wanted? All right, cool. Like, let's do this. But when we're starting to put, like, a legitimate amount of money into something, then it's, like, all right, look. Let me look around, do my due diligence, and make sure this is a decent choice. And if you go out and you say specifically who your competitors are, and then you can actually start to craft a narrative around that competitive differentiation. You can start to influence the opinion of the person who's going to ultimately make that buying decision. And instead of having another third-party publication or having that competitor craft or formulate that narrative in your place. Yeah. I think that's the key there, is just getting in, having an opinion, making sure it's upfront. You don't have to bash people. I think that's the big thing that people are concerned with. They don't want to, you know, they want to be respectful. And I totally agree. Like, there's a right way of doing things like that. That's why competitive messaging is a thing. There's a right way of going out and differentiating against competitors and saying who you're up against. And so that's why, but like, to completely ignore that is, it's tough to then have the buyer go then and like put you in a specific spot, like in their mind, like put you in like a specific category against other players. It's tough for them to really understand the value, understand like what they should do with you if they do buy you, and, like if they should replace something else, if they should change a specific piece in their workflow. And so that's why I think it's almost just like ignoring a big part of the buying process, which whenever we're trying to market, we're trying to understand it all, like not ignore a big part of it. And so that's why I think it's important.
No competitors.
Yeah. Like head in the sand kind of stuff. Like it's like, why are you doing that? Yeah, exactly.
Sure. I think something so key about what you're saying is taking that initiative and treating competitive as an inevitability. It's someone is going to position your company. Someone's going to compare it for your competitor versus you, and having that kind of addressing your competitors head on is a way of taking the mic and getting that first impression in, getting that first idea in your customer's mind about who you are and how you stand against insert whatever competitor that you're up against. I think that's treating it as that inevitability rather than as, oh, this is some dirty tactic that people take to start like jabbing at competitors. I think that's a really helpful point of clarity. And I noticed the word that you were using almost interchangeably is differentiation. And I find, as I think about competitive, that's a really helpful word because it's different than what people think when they think competitive. Could you just say a little bit more about what differentiation looks like when you're trying to compete? Like how can a product marketer make sure that they're clearly differentiated from their competitors?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few different ways that you can do that. I think there's a couple of things. I think it's important to say how you're different, but then also say how you're similar. Because in a lot of cases, you know, if you're going for one of the hardest things when it comes to replacing a technology is the actual process of doing so. It's hard. It's hard to like replace a piece of tech with another piece of tech, because there's like implementation, there's people that need to like learn how to use it, there's connecting with a bunch of other systems. And so, you know, we do talk about differentiation, but at the end of the day, it's really important to talk about how it's going to be an easy transition, how yes, we also have the, you know, these fundamental features that you expect with, you know, whatever it is, whatever category it is that you're competing in. We have those things. So don't worry about that. Yeah. Like kind of like put those worries at ease. But then, it's really important to talk through how you're different. And there's a few ways you can do that. You can do it through the actual product. So what features do you have that your competitors don't have? And like, what does that help the buyer accomplish in a unique way that they maybe couldn't accomplish before with the competitor? How are you priced differently or packaged differently? Like, are you an all-in-one solution? Do you have add-ons? There's pros and cons to all of those things. And so just making sure that you can like accurately describe like why that's maybe a more enticing direction to go in versus whatever your competitors, however they package things. You know, customer support, customer service. It could be how you give people like a customer success manager, whereas like the competitor doesn't do that until you're like above a 20K ACV or ARR or whatever. So you can literally differentiate in so many different ways, like no pun intended. You just have to get kind of creative and try to figure out like what your onlyness is, if I can quote Pep Laya. You have to go like every day. Depends on the business. If you have like a decent enough business to where you have resources for a product marketer or a competitive intel practitioner, then there is, then people are going out and purchasing your product frequently over something else. Yeah. And so your job is to go out and figure out why did they do that? And your customer, your buyer, they're going to probably tell you, we did it for XYZ reasons, and we realized that the competitor couldn't do that. And, you know, it might be price, it might be features, it might be support, something else. But it's up to you to like see, okay, cool, we're going to take those differentiators and we're just going to shout them like from the rooftops, and we're going to make it known that this is like our the big ways that we're different, and here's why they're valuable for people. So that's kind of how I've approached differentiators versus, you know, sameness. I think that it's very important to touch on both, but you do need to have like, I always try to have like three big differentiators that like, yeah, like these are the big three that anybody throughout the company, whether it's sales, product, marketing, whatever, like you can recite these big three differentiators, because that's what people always ask at the end of the day. I feel like when you, even if you're not a buyer, people will go around and ask and be like, oh yeah, so like, how are you different from that other company? Like just out of curiosity. And if you're like, oh yeah, we're pretty much the same. I mean, I don't, you know, then like, what is that?
Yeah.
How does that reflect on the company, on the product? It's much like, okay, like it doesn't, it's like not super valuable. But if you can just then recite like, oh, great question. Like, boom, we have this, they don't, we have this, they don't. If you can do that off the top of your head, then it just, it strengthens, I've found, just like the overall narrative for the company. And it only brings good things when you can have that level of comfort.
Yeah. I mean, I experienced that. I was at a conference and there's a particular product in the interactive product demo space that I sort of have a brand affinity for. And I was at this conference and saw another vendor in the space. And so I went up to the booth and my only question was like, hey, how are you guys different from so-and-so? And the person at the booth could not produce an answer for me. Like I walked away having no idea how they were different. And I'm not ready to pull out my credit card and buy, but there is the reality that I've kind of dismissed that vendor now. I'll just go back to the one I already have brand affinity for because you couldn't tell me why you were different. And I do think that is the experience of a lot of buyers.
Yeah.
Is that they want to know, like, tell me fast, what are the bullet points about why you're different?
Yeah. And even if you're not like evaluating the tool to buy now, like that stuff sticks in your head, like just as a consumer, you know what I mean? You remember these things. And even if you're not buying like right now, you'll remember that conversation like for a couple years, probably even more. And like that interaction is going to have so much weight over time. And so, you know, just to have those top two or three differentiators, it really is so, so important for anybody that is having any kind of customer interaction. 100%.
Yeah. I want to point out how for most product marketers are comfortable with the idea of differentiation. And it feels like the jump you make when you go from differentiation to competitive, obviously there's not like an even separation, but is comfort saying this competitor does not have this thing. Like, if I was like, we do this, and you lead with your differentiator out in public, you're taking a page from April Dunford's book and you're saying, this is how we're different.
I think, I don't know, that stands out to me in your answer, because I think it just destigmatizes some of this fear that people have around being competitive and actually having an opinion about your competitors.
Yeah, totally. I think that, how do I want to respond to that? I think that it doesn't have to always be like, we have this, they don't. It could be more like, hey, there's actually like research that's shown if you speak positively about a competitor, that can actually have a positive impact on how you're perceived as a brand. And so a very common like approach to dealing with that, like from a sales perspective, I've seen is, oh yeah, like we've heard of whoever, like competitor X, they're great people, they have a great product that we found is really solid for this use case or this audience, assuming that this is not, you know, whatever, like whereas we are more popular for your audience or your industry, whatever. And to double down and explain to, like, and because we do that, like we've like really leaned more into features A, B, and C, which we've found have been more beneficial to, and then you can kind of talk through. So even though you're not like saying what they don't have, or you're not saying that they suck or anything like that, you are still positioning yourself as a better fit for whoever it is that you're speaking with. you're not tearing anybody down. And so again, yeah, I think that you're like this whole point of like destigmatizing and, you know, making these conversations not so negative. I think that that's super important as it relates to competitive intel and differentiation. So yeah, just another thing to consider as you're building this stuff out. You don't, there's no set like rule book as it relates to competitive, and you can definitely go outside of what you might have traditionally thought was okay or kosher, like with competitive for sure.
I was hoping you would come on here and unpack that you're writing the rule book. Like, here it is, healthy competition.
Yeah, no, not yet, unfortunately. I did make a playbook a couple of years ago. It was like a digital course, and that was a lot of fun to put together. It was like my own kind of like process for building like a competitive intel program, and that was a lot of fun. But that was the other thing too, as I've built out healthy competition, I've really just enjoyed more understanding what other people are doing, because competitive intel is so, like I said, it's so not like not many people talk about it. I found that there are so many like unique workflows and processes for collecting competitive information that like I would much rather like learn from other people and highlight like all the cool things that they're doing than just kind of like share like, yeah, here's how I've done things, like boom, 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 boom. Like it can kind of get boring after a while. And I found a lot of joy in just kind of like learning about like what other people's unique approaches are and then kind of building off on top of that, sharing that with other people. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun for sure.
Yeah. Well, I would love to talk sort of high level about this on that note of looking at what other people are doing. My guess is that a lot of our listeners probably have bare bones competitive setup right now. And that's not to, just because I think a lot of companies are not yet at the spot where they have leaned enough into this to dedicate headcount to it, or it's a solo PMM and they're trying to cover everything else for that function and competitive. And so if you were to identify three or four competitive bases that need to be covered, like these are the essentials if you're going to go build something competitive tomorrow or try to start making a step forward for your competitive program tomorrow, what would those three or four bases be?
Yeah, the first is an understanding of what the goals are for the company, right? That will help you just understand directionally what you should be researching. So it's not dissimilar to any other role at a company, any other marketing role, any other sales, go-to-market, anything like that. So that's number one. You need to have like a solid set of goals for the company. Number two is you need to have some kind of communication channel so that you can share details with the broader company and you can start to get everybody on the same page. What I've realized when I come into a company to support or start a competitive intel role is it's not like you're going into a company and there hasn't been competitive conversations before. You know, like people have been talking about it. Just kind of they're in silos. So there's like competitive conversations from a product perspective on the product management team. On the marketing team, they might be saying something different. On the sales side, they're saying something different. And then on the executive side, they're saying completely different things. And so going in, I think it's one of the most important things is to align everybody around a common narrative. Make sure that everyone's feeling good and has like their basic questions answered around why, like maybe you're focusing on the competitors that you're focusing on and why you're not focusing on a handful of competitors that maybe aren't as important, and that we start to say the same things to other people, other buyers on our, on our website. So that's important, right? Aligning kind of like those communication channels, and you can set that up through like a newsletter every single month, through a competitive Slack channel, through sales enablement, presentations, through win-loss survey and interview readouts. Like all of those are like great like ways of just aligning everybody into understanding really like what the situation is in terms of the competitors that you're up against. So you have those two. And then the third is just having good like research practices put into place. So understanding like the sources where you can actually like dig into like what your competitors are up to, having access to customers and buyers, or people that evaluated your product before, so that you can actually talk to them and get more insight. Yeah. 'Cause again, like, you know, the communication channels are great, but like, what are you going to communicate if you don't have these research kind of pillars in place? And so that would be the third thing, is just making sure you have like good sources that can be trusted, and you have an efficient way of gathering the information so that you're not spending like too much time on, like for example, I used to spend, oh my God, like hours, days collecting and curating like G2 reviews of like our competitors. And now there's a really easy way of doing that with all of this like wonderful automation and AI innovation that's come out over the past couple of years. And so, you know, staying in tune with like really like the best ways of collecting all that information, that could be through a tool, that could be just through like talking with other people and understanding like, hey, like what's the best way of like doing this like really efficiently or quickly. Just to make sure that again, like you're on top of things and that you're not like spending too much time on one task. 'Cause that's the other thing. Like there, if I've found that most competitive intel practitioners are torn in a lot of different directions. And so you need to have really good practices in place for gathering info on a specific competitor so that you can like gather it, make an informed decision or an opinion, present on it, and then move on to the next thing. And so that's how I would kind of classify as like my foundation for making sure that you can like jump in and you can start putting together like a decent competitive program.
Yeah. And when you talk about those habits for research, are you, it sounds, I hear you talking about tools a little bit. It kind of also sounds like knowing your correct sources. Does some of this come down to like a time blocked period of time that you're allotting and saying, all right, this is my research time, or is it more organic than
I think that depends on the person. I think that depends on the person. I've never really been one to have like, okay, this is my research time. But, you know, throughout the week, I mean, I'm always looking at like what's going on in my landscape, like with different like industry analysts, with publications that are coming out around like what's new, with our competitors' release notes, with like what people are saying on LinkedIn. So it really just depends on how it depends on the individual. Like some people like aren't like in the world as deep, like they're not as embedded personally, which is totally fine. But yet for those people, it might make sense to be like, okay, like for these 2 hours, I'm just going to like spend like browsing. Like these are like the websites that I know that are going to share the most valuable information. I'm going to spend some time like reading through and just kind of understanding like what happened this most recent week or month, whatever. Or like, these are the podcasts of people that like talk about like the space. And you know, it's funny, 'cause I've talked about this a little bit, but I haven't really like dove in deeply into it. But I think one good element of a competitive intel program is understanding the market. Like we kind of, sometimes people say market intelligence and competitive intelligence interchangeably, but it's a little different. Competitive is understanding like the individual players within a market. Market intel is understanding the market as a whole. And that really gives a lot more context when you are researching competitors. And so I do think that it's important for anyone that's in a role like this to have a solid understanding and level of comfort when it comes to talking about the market that they're competing within, because having that understanding is going to give you, again, much more of an opinion on like where competitors are going, why that's important, where they might not be going. And so there's like the competitive resources that you're like looking into to get a better understanding of like the vendor itself. But then you also have like the market resources that are going to tell you a little bit more about the environment that you're competing within. So hopefully that makes sense.
No, it absolutely does. You know, one, you mentioned this earlier with G2 ratings and hours combing through G2. Apollo had a really cool post. I want to say it was about a week ago, where Apollo had a post on about ZoomInfo, where they took screenshots of the G2 ratings for both Apollo and ZoomInfo, something like 6,700 reviews, something absurd like that, and just put them side by side and let the reviews sort of speak for themselves. And from the outside, that's powerful because it's actually letting customers compete for you. It's letting them do the talking. It's very similar to what you were talking earlier with what Dan's been up to with building a community of people who just will go to bat for Apollo. So for those of us who don't have thousands of reviews on G2 to pull from, what are some other ways that you could think of that we can begin leveraging our customers to be that competitive voice?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think number one, having a good like little, it could be a customer advisory board. That's a great first step in trying to understand really what your customers are wanting, why they're picking you, like what their the top of mind problems are that like in their day to day, and then going from there. I think that like having that foundation of like a CAB is super, super important for each of your buyer personas. Some companies have multiple buyer personas that they're selling into. Some of them just have one, and that's okay. But starting small and then kind of expanding from there. And then the big thing with like customer advisory boards or communities is it's a two-way street. It's not like we want you guys to just do a bunch of stuff for us. It's primarily like, hey, how can we continue to serve you? How can we make your lives easier? What direction should we be going in to make your experience with our product just that much better? And so it really comes from a place of trust. And so I think that's one way that you, number one, you should like probably position a CAB. I don't run Apollo's CAB, just to be clear. Like we have a community and a brand team that handles all that stuff. But, you know, based on what I've observed from them and from previous CABs that I've paid attention to at previous companies, that's the whole point, is to like instill that level of trust and to give, like just like an unending amount of like giving, because once you do that, then you're starting to instill this, this almost like feeling of like reciprocity where, we're giving you all these things and people want to like go to bat for you. They want to give you that review on G2. They want to talk highly of you to, their peers. They'll talk publicly about you on LinkedIn, and you can't manufacture that at scale. Like you can't like just like, it's almost like that, like we talk about like demand, it's like demand creation versus demand generation. Like you can't just manufacture people like and like buy them to like speak super, super highly of you continuously, even when you're not looking, that kind of a thing. So the whole goal of like Apollo's community and brand has been to make people want to, again, go to bat for Apollo, speak highly, because Apollo has gone to bat for them, and they've and our product team, our marketing team, sales are just like so committed to making sure that they have a positive experience. I know it's kind of a basic answer, but like to focus on the customer, give, and you know, good things will happen. You just have to, again, like start from that POV as opposed to like starting from like the, oh, how can we get, you know, 6,700 reviews on G2? Like that's not really the mentality that like Apollo, that like Dan or the team really had when they started building out the community. It was more like, how can we make the customer experience better? And it's kind of grown from there.
That wasn't their KPI.
I don't think so. I don't think that was. I might have to double check, but probably not.
But your comment on the CAB is so helpful, because I've been a part of companies where the CAB really, you know, might try to frame it like, oh, we want to do this for you. But at the end of the day, there's a whole team of people who are just hungry for all the feedback. They're like, give us all your feedback. No. Just like constantly just trying to take, frankly. And it's like, what can I – and you get these people who are on customer advisory boards who are completely exhausted because the product team and the CS team and everyone is just treating them as a resource to pull from. And so call it simple. But I do think your reframing of – how do you get this customer advisory board where it's this group of people that your company just takes radically good care of and gives a ton to them, and trust that that kind of the way up is down. They're like, if you give, eventually it comes around.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
good things happen.
You're investing in something that will actually go your way. I think that's a really, really helpful reframe. To end, I want to do a version of best and worst.
Let's do it.
If you're up for
yeah.
it. I know you nerd out on competitive campaigns all the time. I follow your newsletter. It's best one in my inbox, or one of the best ones in my inbox right now. It's really
thanks,
good.
Thanks, dude.
And I would love to know what is the best and worst competitive campaign you've seen in the last year? One of each.
You
pick whatever one you want to start with, but best and worst.
Yeah, yeah. I listed it as best scrappy competitive play, but yeah, it was Capsule. And their founder went out and said, hey, I'm going to give $1,000 to anybody who replies with the correct answer. We recently put Capsule head-to-head against four other video editors. We measured how long it took for each tool to make the same exact video. If you can guess the correct order from fast to slowest, you win. And so like, it was just a very simple, like little like post. And obviously, yeah. You know, Capsule was fastest. And it got participation. It got, you know, some excitement. It was like a little like tongue in cheek. And it was scrappy. Like, again, like what is the cost of this? It wasn't a sponsored post. He just said like, yeah, you'll get $1,000 if you're the first person to answer this correctly. And so you had a bunch of replies. And it did get a bunch of replies. It got a bunch of, engagement on the post. I thought that was really good, really creative. It wasn't like this massive, like, oh my God, like the world is talking about this, but like to their target audience, like it was really impactful. And so that's why it was one of my standouts.
Yeah.
I don't have a least favorite one. I'm sorry. I don't track like terrible competitive campaigns, 'cause that would be a little bit like anti what I'm about.
What do you think then is the biggest mistake that often gets made?
I think the biggest mistake is, I'd say it's like the cringiest thing when people think that they're being funny, but it's not funny. And like, this is really hard to like nail, but it's like, if you can be funny, if you can put a smile on people's face, like you will go so much farther with your competitive marketing, like so much farther. People will like just appreciate a bit more. Yeah. You won't look like such a jerk. Even if like the marketing is like, even if you're not like really changing people's minds, if you can still like get a smile out of people, like that's like, then you've won. But if you go out and you try to be funny and you diss a competitor, then it's almost like a double negative. Like you weren't funny. You didn't make me laugh. It was actually like an eye roll, and you're trying to like diss somebody else. That's like, I've found to be like people it really turns people off. I don't have like exact science for this, unfortunately. This is like a me personal kind of a thing. Yeah. It's like, dude, like that was like not that. It. And so like, I don't know what the solution there is. If you need a little bit more of like a committee before you send out like or you have to be really confident that you're funny. But yeah, that's, I would recommend to being careful there.
Well, dude, Andy, thank you so much for coming on to the show. If people want to keep up with you and kind of know what you're up to.
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn just about every single day, obsessively on LinkedIn. But if you want to follow me there, just search my name. I'm there. Healthy Competition has a page there, too. We post memes and examples just about every single day, too. And if you want to learn more about Healthy Competition, just go to healthycompetition.co.
Yeah, and I will
thank
say
you.
The meme content.
Thank you, I appreciate content. That.
They're quality memes. I was showing my wife the Love is Blind
meme. Oh my God, I love that meme. It's so good when I find a good like format that's going around, and I'm like, yes, this is going to, yeah. Luckily, I enjoy making them, and it's not like such a hassle to constantly put those out, but yeah, that was a fun one for sure.